Mr. Lund in Reel 10. Yeah, Mr. Lund, you were talking about Major Allison and Sergeant Stern.
Oh, yes, he's... well, Major Allison was... He was just a bit different. He was different in in several ways, really. And he used to... whereas all the other company commanders that I know, in other companies, even in other companies, Major Allison used to wear a gabardine battle dress. He was the only one who did that. Even his commanding officer didn't do that.
Does that mean it was
specific? No, it doesn't mean anything. It was just his fancy.
But it wasn't a standard issue?
It wasn't, no.
So gabardine, no. What did that mean? He had to buy it himself?
Buy himself, yeah. He would have had to be fitted for that.
And would it be smarter than...
Well, yeah. It was more comfortable than the ordinary heavy battle dress, you see. But he always had that. And he was, as I say, in the civilian life, he was a solicitor in Newcastle. And when Harry Stone was the... Whereas Allison was a bit refined, Harry was crude. Put it that way. That's it.
In terms of his language?
Well, in terms of everything. Now, I don't mean Harry was ignorant. I don't mean that. But Harry was crude in a London sort of way, if you see what I mean. He was a lovely old language chap, really, old Harry. But he was very popular.
So how did Allison?
Oh well, it didn't go down well with Allison. That he, Allison never. Harry, well, actually, what happened was that we had a change of sergeant major. And what happened was that. For a short while, we were without a sergeant major. And
this is Broadhead had left.
Broadhead had gone to D Company. So we were without a sergeant, just temporary, we were without a sergeant. So just to fill in, I got Percy Glover to stand in until such times as somebody was appointed, which was only a matter of about a week or so, or something like that. Percy Glover was in headquarter company. He was in command of the ACAC platoon, so that was okay. He had somebody ready made. But of course, he was WO3. He was PSM Glover. That didn't matter. They gave him a temporary, uplifted him temporary. And he stood in until such times as the appointment was made. Well, lo and behold, it happened to be Harry Stern. One thing I'm sure of, that, or I feel sure of, that the recommendation never came from Morrison. Although, when Harry took over as TSM, he hadn't had any sort of dispute or argument of any sort with Allison at all. He hadn't had any. But I somehow don't think that the recommendation came from Allison. I don't know where it came from, to be quite honest. But anyway, I mean, I knew Harry. I knew all the NCOs in the company, all of them. And I used to, work with them and arrange things with them and do all sorts of things. I knew them very personally, and Harry was one of them. So
So what happened after Harry Stern got the job?
He was made up and sergeant major, and we were going out on exercises quite a lot then, and it was whilst we were on an exercise one time, anyway, we've been out about several days up to a week, I suppose, something like that. And in those days, the company commanders didn't have jeeps. They had these little Austin PU vans thing, and flimsy things, really, they were, but anyway, that's what they had. He was on this exercise, and he did, something happened, and I can't remember, but somehow or other, there was some sort of an argument between Hollister and Harry Stern, and Harry lost his temper with him. When Harry lost his temper, if anybody upset Harry, he always had this ruddy complexion, but he really looked a bit ferocious, you know, and he got a little bit beside himself, and he stood by the side of this PU vehicle, Hollister's car, like he stood beside him, and he was rocking the car and shouting at us, and Hollister, you know, through the window, and anyway, Hollister, we finished the exercise. When we finished the exercise, we came back to Rye, and Harry Stern said to me, they all used to call me Lou. Nearly everybody called me Lou. I don't, just because it was Lou, and I think they'd call me, all of the NCOs used to call me Lou. He said to me, I think I've seen the last of this job after that lot. When we were on the exercise, I said, well, we never know. I said, he may have forgotten all about it, because I was used to talk to him like that. Not because it was Harry, but you could talk to him like that. But I mean, he could be a disciplinarian, he could be, if he wanted to be. But, I mean, you know what I mean, I was in a position to. He said, I think I've had it now. And he said, I'll be getting Percy Glover back in again for a while. Well, Harry was near enough, right, because Hollister reported him. But they were very decent about it. I say decent, because I think what happened was that, I'm only putting two and two together, but a little bit I've found out that Hollister reported this incident on the exercise to the adjutant. And the adjutant suggested to Hollister that, he only made a suggestion, he said that we'd be good, they'd made a mistake in the first place to upgrade Harry Stern, and that with all due respect to Harry Stern, the best thing to do would be to put him back where he came from, return him to the Mortar Platoon, because he was trained as detachment commander, put him back there, and then he said we will have to see about getting someone else in. He said, I just made the suggestion, you see. That's what I think happened.
So, can you remember what the argument might have been about between the?
It was something that happened.
So we're still talking about Sergeant Stern and Major Hollister.
Oh, yeah.
And can you remember what the argument was about?
Well, there was something that happened on the exercise. I think Hollister was criticising him for something that he didn't do. And Harry, I think really that there was something, Harry hadn't done something. He should have been forewarned about it. I don't think it was his fault, really.
But he took the blame.
And that's why he took the attitude that he did.
But wouldn't it be quite serious for a sergeant to talk to an officer in that way?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that was, he could have lost the lot.
So he could have
but
been...
Then, of course, you see, they would have had gone... The coach would then have had to go to the CO. I mean, Hollister couldn't try him. would have had to go to the CO, and he may well have finished as a court martial. If they, I think the suggestion, I'm only half guessing when I said about that suggestion that was made by the adjutant, but I don't think I'm far wrong. Because they didn't want to go through all that. It was much easier to do it the way they did.
So they both compromised, really.
It was a compromise, you know. In other words, I think it must be said that Harry was a square peg in a round hole. All due respect to Harry, but he was, you know.
Can you remember what he was actually saying to Major Olson?
Well, he just lost control. He lost control to such an extent that he got hold of the top of the vehicle. And, I mean, he was a powerful bloke. He was a powerful, built powerfully, and he had the strength. And he's just doing this with the side of the vehicle.
And Olsen was inside it.
And he was inside it, you see.
So he was lucky to be inside, in a way.
Well, so was I. I was inside it as well. But I could hear what was being said, you know. It was a bit... Yeah.
So that would have been a talking point amongst everybody for a while.
Well, it was to some, because fortunately, there weren't that many rounders. In other words, there weren't that many people around us, near to us. And so I don't think there was many people. They probably wonder what Harry's turn was rocking the boat for. But other than that, there weren't many people around us. So I think that suited Olsen and also suited Harry Stern, really.
Right. That's moved us forward a little bit to Rye. So if we could get back to Scotland. Did you have any leaves at all from Scotland?
No.
So you're up there?
No, we couldn't. We couldn't do. No, we had no leaves in Scotland. No.
Is there anything else about your time there that maybe we haven't covered?
Scotland, you mean? Well, there was also Dunfermline Dalkeith. We were fairly scattered, but there was just sort of the odd two or three days. And D Company, Charlie Bray reminded me, went into a place called Bonnyrigg. That was called Bonnyrigg. That was only same as what we were, you know.
So the battalion was dispersed.
Oh yeah. We had to put it somewhere, you see. But as I say, what I mean is, obviously there were things coming out of Morton Hall. You see, you've got to remember that we had. The intake had come in, they'd been kitted out. There was all the stuff to move out from there. And a lot of the stuff, I would imagine, came south by road, I should imagine. Most of the quartermaster stuff came down by road, I should think. That was the easiest way to do it.
So how did the troops?
We came by train. Then there were other things that had to come down, probably. There was quite a lot of stuff that had to come down. I dare say that they had to, those two or three days that we had in places like Dalkeith and Bonnyrigg and Dunfermline, it gave them a chance to organise the moving the stuff out and clearing the site, as you might say. But I dare say that the tents were probably left there.
Do you think you were a trained battalion by this time?
What?
A trained battalion. Do you think you were kind of operational? Do you think?
Oh no. No, that we weren't really, because although the rifle companies were pretty well up to strength. The intake had come in, as I say. The rifle companies were pretty well up to strength, but I don't think any of the companies were at full strength. Not even when we got to Thetford.
And what about the level of training that, or, that you
Well, that again...
Do you think you were trained soldiers?
No, I wouldn't say that even then, because really, because especially the specialist platoons, they were had a lot of leeway to make up.
In what way?
It wasn't their fault.
In what way did that show itself? The fact that they weren't quite up to speed at their jobs.
Well, it didn't really show itself. It didn't really show itself. I think the only way there were the only way it didn't show, well, where it showed was probably in the signal platoon. Now, I'm not that more or less puts the thing in front of Taffy James, but you know, with all due respect to Taffy James, they weren't ready, and there was a lot for them to do. I mean, they had to sort of get all the communications going and all that, keeping, you know.
And you felt that wasn't quite working.
Well, the personnel weren't ready for it. They hadn't had sufficient time, not nearly enough time.
So would that show itself when you were on exercises?
It might have done when we were on exercises at times in Norfolk, because we did a lot of exercises in Norfolk.
Ah, that's moving us forward. Can you remember any exercises in Scotland, any schemes in Scotland?
No, we didn't do anything in Scotland. We didn't do any schemes in Scotland.
Okay, so you moved down from Scotland. When was that, do you think?
I do know one thing. When we left Scotland, they were having bad weather. They had quite a bit of snow. And I would imagine it must have been...
kind of winter of 40.
It must have been 41, I should think. It would be winter time, definitely, because there was definitely snow in Scotland when we left.
So, any memories of the journey down? Anything that stands in?
We came down by train, and now the likes of me, for instance, had never. We knew where the River Tyne was, but we'd never been across the Tyne. And we knew about the Tyne Bridge, and we knew about Newcastle Central Station. We didn't know, but the intake quickly told us about it. But prior to meeting them, we didn't know anything. We were completely ignorant about. I mean, I'm talking about larger than me.
Yeah. So the journey down would have been quite interesting.
Well, it was really, yeah, because we did it. I can't remember where we travelled. I've got an idea that we travelled late evening. I could be wrong about that. But I remember that. I remember that when we came down on the train, because, as I say, that was why these sort of, what's I call them, little periods in Dunfermline, etc. That was all being arranged whilst we were in there. You see, we were able to then get on the train, and a whole lot of us were able to come down together, and. And I don't think they were quite ready for us. I mean, getting everything arranged for the train and everything. I remember that. And yeah.
So the intake would have been pleased to be going through there.
Yeah, especially when I crossed over the bridge.
Did you ever? I just move on, just like jumping sideways. Did you ever get to Brandsmith in your time with the DLI?
No.
So this train journey would have probably been the nearest you got to Durham.
Yeah.
Actually passing through it.
Yeah. No, I never did go to Brandsmith.
So passing through Durham in 1940 and Newcastle and the stations and so on. Yeah. So what happened when you got to Thetford?
Oh, Thetford, yeah. When we that was the thing, was we had...
Where were you billeted?
We were dispersed. We were slightly dispersed. I think most of the battalion was in somewhere in the town of Thetford. But I think most of them were. I don't think there was anybody out of Thetford.
And were you in private houses or barracks? Or?
Well, what I said before about travelling down overnight. I've got a feeling that we did travel down overnight when we made that journey. Anyway, they've kept the companies all separate, but the A, B, C, and D, and then what there was of headquarter company, and then of course you see you had the other things that they had to work in. They'd already mapped out the places where there was going to be officers' mess and sergeants' mess, QM stores, orderly room, and so on. They mapped out that somebody had gone down and everything was, they knew exactly where everything was going to be before we got there. And so far as we were concerned, the headquarter company, we were just on the outskirts of, well, we were just inside Thetford.
Okay.
The first there were some empty shops. I remember that there were about three or four empty shops all together, and one of those was taken as a temporary company headquarters. The others were used for small batches where they could. You know, there was nothing very. They were going to find a better places for them, but which they did do. That was just a temporary measure to get us started there, you know. And the rifle companies were better off than we were, really, because they were at least were all together, and they found the place big enough to take them all, and that was it.
So you had a couple of changes to your colonel. From your original colonel. Can you remember anything about that?
Yeah, yes, we did.
And who they might have been?
I couldn't really tell you.
Well, did the style of how the battalion was run, did that change with the change of...
Oh, no, it didn't. It was never, there was never any, no changes in that direction, no. But I was only thinking of the names of whatever. I've seen the names down in the things from the association and that sort of thing, and I recognise the names.
Because the battalion history has talked about Colonel Murray of the Grenadier Guards and his influence on.
I can remember that name, yeah.
And how he his style of leadership, because he was a guardsman apparently, and the DLI shoulder flashes apparently came in around about this time. Do you have anything about those?
No, I didn't know anything about that. Uh-huh.
No. So you're at Thetford. What were you doing there?
Oh, well, then of course the most important thing was to sort of get settled, and I can remember that, as I was just said, were you as a temporary measure, we used one of these shops, and Broadhead was CSM then, and we still had Major Barrington, and we could, from where we were, we could look across the road, and there was, it wasn't there was it was a big house. You would look down, look across the road, and there's a wall, and there's a big area of it's like a park. There's a big house in this park, and they use that house for battalion headquarters. That was Taylor Mayford's battalion headquarters. There was also a Nissen hut down there, and we had that. We took that for company headquarters, for our quarter company. And I should think that you showed me a photograph of Wally Hudson once, last week. Wally Hudson was a storeman there. I can remember that, in Thetford, in that Nissen hut. Then we were right, and we were right, we could throw a stone from the Nissen hut down to the house where that was battalion headquarters. Now the rest of it was all, today it's a housing estate, I can tell you that. And it's called the Abbey Estate because the locals called this big house the Abbey. I don't know why, it didn't look like an Abbey, but they called it the Abbey. And that has all been built on, all that ground that was down there has all been built on, and they call it the Abbey Estate. I know somebody who lives there.
So what duties was the battalion engaged in? What responsibilities did you have?
I should imagine that, we were then in Norfolk, so the obvious plan was to get us out on plenty of exercises, which we did. As from then on, once they got organised, and then we used to do a lot of exercises in Norfolk.
What kind of exercise?
All kinds.
Well, can you describe the different kinds and how?
Well, I mean,
what kind of exercises were there for you to do?
I mean, the same sort of, make an attack or do the reverse. Or go across, using different methods, that sort of thing. But we had to make use of it was ideal countryside for that, for what they wanted. Because not very far away from Thetford, were large areas of, well, it was wooded, wait a minute. See, we were near places like Brandon and Worcester, and that was in Norfolk. Now, I'll just name those two, and that area was used for manoeuvres.
And
other units have done the same as what we were doing.
So these manoeuvres that you're engaged in, would there be a different levels of would there be large manoeuvres and so on? I mean, can you describe the different?
Well, we used to sometimes do them maybe with another brigade or something like that. See, we were 139 brigade. We maybe do them with another brigade, because the rest of the division really weren't that far away, although they were fairly scattered.